Hey, this is Barry and Dave from ScreenGeeks.com, and we've got a real treat for you guys. We're going to interview Logan and Noah Miller, the directors and creators of Touching Home. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having us, guys.
Absolutely. Let me immediately start pimping your book. You guys have written a book about your experience of making your debut film, Touching Home. The book is called Either You're In or You're In the Way, detailing your experience in writing this film that is essentially a semi-autobiographical tale, your experience of being first-time filmmakers, first-time screenwriters, first-time directors, and somehow managing amazingly to get Ed Harris and a very accomplished cast to make your film, and most impressively, making one of the most impressive debut films I have seen all year. I guess one of the first questions I want to throw at you, you mentioned on your site that one of the books you turned to was it Lou Hunter's Screenwriting 434?
That was when Bill Watt, as you guys saw the movie, you know, we used to play baseball, and when that didn't work out, we, for obvious reasons, didn't want to go home and you know, work in construction. And so we, a buddy of ours was living in Los Angeles, and we were living in Tucson at the time, just working at a car wash. And he said, you know, why don't you guys come on out to L.A. and crash on my floor and figure out what you want to do with your lives. So we came on out here and crashed on his floor. And then Noah said, you know, let's try and find somebody to write a movie about us and our dad. And then about 5 minutes later, he said, well, why don't we do it? And then we went out and bought Lou Hunter's Screenwriting 434. And then
the book makes sense. It was.
And then we started writing screenplay.
When you finished your screenplay, rather, and you decided that you wanted Ed Harris to be the man to play your father, a fictional version of your father, why Ed Harris? Was there a specific performance he gave, or was there a special movie that he did you thought he could really embody him?
We can't attribute to a specific performance other than, you know, as kids, you know, growing up, you'd see a movie with Ed Harris in it, and he just always reminded us of our father. And people would, you know, that you knew would say, yeah, Ed Harris, God, that guy looks just like your dad. And so that was embedded in our heads before we even had any inclination of making movies or what it took to make one. So just with that in our minds, we, you know, once we completed the screenplay, I mean, he was our number one, but he was so far away from what we thought was, you know, possible. We were visiting. Our dad was homeless for the last 15 years of his life, and he was in and out of jail quite a bit the last 5 years. And we were visiting him shortly before he passed away. And he used to always ask us, when are you going to make our movie? And we'd always say, yeah, well, you know, we're going to make it soon. And then he asked us, you know, well, who's going to play me? He's got to be good looking. And we said, oh, yeah, Ed Harris. We're going to get Ed Harris to play you.
But we were just tossing it out there, you know, just as a jailhouse dream and something to lighten a not-so-happy situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. You guys, let's see, Logan, you play Lane, who's somewhat more sympathetic to Dad, and Noah, you cast yourself as Clint, who's the more hard-headed brother. I'm just going out on a limb here, assuming that did you guys cast according to who you were in real life, or did you swap roles? Like, how did you decide who was going to play which role?
We cast according to our each of our sort of temperament and who, you know, just the role that we tended to play in our relationship with our father.
And since it is, you know, based on our lives, it wasn't. Well, I suppose we could have, you know, swapped, but we just thought it would be best to keep, you know,
what was our more sort of natural tendency.
Did you ever think of, like, casting actors as this role? Like, and not to say you guys aren't actors, don't get me wrong, but did you think, like, yeah, maybe we could find somebody else to play us to kind of take the pressure off?
Oh, sure, yeah. When we first wrote the script, we weren't imagining ourselves playing the characters. It was just, you know, we enjoyed the process of writing and wanted to tell our story. But as we started making the movie, we received the Panavision New Filmmaker grant shortly after our father passed away, and we had made a vow to our father that we was going to make this movie as a dedication to him. And so we received the Panavision New Filmmaker grant, and since we'd never directed anything before, we knew we had to put something on film to demonstrate that we had a vision for the movie. So we went down to Tucson, Arizona, and filmed for 3 days with the Colorado Rockies and cut together this little 2-minute trailer. and we were the guys in the trailer. We didn't have any actors for the movie yet, and so we just happened to be the guys that that suited up and played the baseball in that trailer. And so we wanted to use that footage in the movie, and so we kind of put ourselves in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then
we felt that it was working just fine, so we stuck with it. And plus, too, trying to find twins that could actually play baseball would have probably been a massive, if not maybe impossible, undertaking. So,
sure.
He fell into it.
Was it hard for you guys to recreate such difficult moments from your childhood?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it was. The most challenging. Well, one of the most challenging aspects about making the movie was it was just very emotionally taxing. My dad hadn't even been dead a year, and we were reenacting these moments that took place in real life, and a lot of them were very frustrating and painful. And so emotionally, it's just, we've never had that sort of grieving process because we decided that we were going to make the movie the day that he died. And so we didn't have time to take this. So we just went, 100% from that day forward. And so we didn't have a lot of time to really, to grieve and stuff. So then when we made the movie, it was just like all this just kind of gushed out of us.
Hmm. When you guys directed the film, did you have a cinematic blueprint? And what I mean by that, was there a certain film that you said, I want Touching Home to look and feel kind of like this film? Did you have a movie like that that inspired you?
Yeah, I mean, there were certainly, films that influenced us. Tender Mercies, Places in the Heart, which actually Ed was in.
Yeah.
Breaking Away. And really just for their kind of straightforward storytelling and just very I don't want to say simple, but sort of everyman quality about them where it's real people dealing with real problems and they're just trying to get a story, of how...
Yeah, the movies aren't encumbered with sort of... Well, it's a very... The style is just to let the story sort of unfold rather than call attention to the camera and whatnot. So for us, it was just kind of, those movies had we felt were very powerful and affecting movies. And so we hoped that we were going to tell a sort of straightforward story. And visually, where we shot is a rural area. And so we wanted to really capture the beauty of the land.
Did you ask Harris for any directing tips?
Oh, sure. I think you asked,
making a movie is team art.
So you're always, at least from our perspective, you're the people that you hire are your collaborators, whether it's your cinematographer, your sound guy, your actors, or, anyone else that you bring on board. So sure. It wasn't so much that you go, hey, Ed, how do we, you don't go, hey, Ed, how do we do this? Because that would immediately... you're the leader out there as the director, and you certainly want to instill confidence in your crew. But
we certainly asked his opinion on things, and he was, very, very generous with his insight. And so, we definitely, we talked to our cinematographer, we talked to our first AD, our key sound, and especially our actors for just suggestions that they might have or ideas that they might have.
We like to run our ideas by the crew and I think the more informed, the better informed your collaborators are, the you're a team, and so the more cohesive the unit will be. That's just, I think, what we learned from coming from baseball, which is a team sport. You just, the shortstop can't field the right fielder's, ball. So if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Good sports analogy. I wanted to ask you, you told Dave and I this great story, and if you could kind of just reconstruct it, if you could describe the ordeal of this big crane shot that you guys had attempted.
So yeah.
So I'm day two of shooting Mia Ruther for reasons.
Well, just for experience.
Inexperience, really. We had this elaborate crane shot that was, I mean, just this crane move was so long.
And we had this, you know, this is going to be this really sort of this beautiful opening shot, right? And it's going to be so expressive, and it's going to convey, you know, the mood of the entire movie film and all this BS.
Yeah. And so first off, the crane was a total heap of junk. Second off, it took, you know, a few hours just to get it set up because it was all, you know, it wasn't the best design crane in the world. And then once we started, you know, getting the shot, we just kept having technical problem after technical problem after technical problem. And
so it took us almost a half day just to get this one freaking shot. And so after that, we just said, no more crane shots. Send the crane back.
We don't need a crane. We're going to, you know, let's keep our simple story we had envisioned it. And, you know,
none of this crane crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it didn't really fit our movie either, you know? So, we learned a very valuable lesson on day two, and that was, you know, you gotta, you know, tell your story and get your shots and don't waste a bunch of time with a bunch of, you know, trying to be, you know, overly fancy.
Yeah, because on our budget, we just didn't have the time to, you know, you had to make your day, and every day was, it seemed like there was more work than was possible, and so
it didn't fit. That shot didn't fit our shooting schedule. Wasn't consistent with sort of the mood and the flow of our film. And so,
we're glad we learned it on day two. Yeah, it was very nice to learn it early on. And then, and matter of fact, that was the only day that we didn't end up making. But we made it up that week. We ended up making up a half day on day three or four. So we ended up.
So we got really lucky.
Yeah, I got really lucky.
One of the things I really loved about your film is that while the material can be very heartbreaking at times and there is some profanity, your movie could be rated PG and acceptable and, you know, accommodating to a family audience. Was this part of the design of the film?
I mean, yeah, I think we just, see, our dad, you know, our dad never swore, you know, and when we were around him, we certainly didn't either, and the story's pretty much me and us and our dad. And so I think we were just, our intention from the beginning was to try to tell the truth of the piece. And essentially, since it is, you know, a story about our lives, most, you know, it was already written, if that makes any sense. We just didn't feel the need.
And also, too, the movies that we, you know, mentioned earlier, Places in the Heart, Tender Mercies, you know, Breaking Away, those films told very powerful stories.
Without, you know, one brother raping the other and, you know.
Right.
And, you know, very powerful stories without, you know, a bunch of profanity and whatnot. I'm not saying that there's not a place for it in film, in movies. There absolutely is. But
every movie needs to be true to itself. And so we never, you know, we never, come to think, I mean, we never even, just never, you know, just never really came.
But also, though, I think, you know, we did want to, there's a lot of people that have dealt with alcoholic parents and people who've died from very, you know, from addictions to various drugs and certainly parents who, you know, who are homeless. And so we just wanted to be able to tell the story also and to reach a, you know, somewhat wide audience, I think so.
And plus our mom would have been pretty ticked off if our first movie advocated a bunch of, you know. Maybe that's the real answer. I don't know.
Well, let me ask you this. This is a stupid question, guys, but I got to ask this. As I'm sure you're aware, there are a lot of really talented brother filmmakers. You got the Hughes brothers, the Coen brothers, the Wachowski brothers, and even the Polish brothers, who are both twin filmmakers. Why do brothers make such good filmmakers?
Well, thank you. Thank you for
even comparing it. Yeah, but yeah, we got a long ways to go, but I think it's just
I think it's just some brothers hate each other, you know. But I think maybe just probably the strength of two people working together. I think, you know, I think that when you have a sort of unified vision and you kind of keep each other in check, you know, you kind of you always have a sounding board. And certainly I will bounce ideas off my brother and he'll say, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. it causes you to really sort of think about your choices and about what you're doing, you know, and always having a second opinion sort of close by. So, and I think, yeah, there's just power in a team as opposed to an individual.
You guys, I got to say, I've seen just about everything Ed Harris has ever done. And without a doubt, this is one of the best performances I've ever seen him give. And that's saying quite a lot. And this movie is so impressively done, guys. Was there a point where you realized that you captured lightning in a bottle? Or were you like, I don't know how this is going to turn out until you put it together in the editing room?
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks again.
As far as Ed Harris's performance, I mean, we knew that... You know, after the first day of shooting, that he had become our father.
It was when he walked on set the first day of shooting. It was, you know, me and brother had to step away from the set because he the way he walked, you know, his cadence. He had just through some superhuman channeling, he had, you know, become our father, and so it was. Yeah, once he came out on set, we said, you know, this is going to be something special. And at the same time, we were terrified that, you know, we had to make our day, you know, because we only had Ed for 11 days.
Yeah.
And so we had, you know, under movie, you know, terms is nothing. And so we just had to, we just, our biggest concern was that, you know, we know Ed Harris is going to be great.
Now we got to be good.
Yeah, we got to be good. we can't mess this up, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, but I think, yeah, just, you never know, though, what you have. I mean, we knew that Ed was going to be outstanding, but you never really know, I think, what you have until you get into the editing room. And so, we did recognize that Ed had allowed us to think about our father in a really sort of extraordinary way. So we'll forever be grateful in that regard.
Did it take long to edit this film? Or I guess a better question is considering how tight the filmmaking was and how tight the budget was it hard to lose scenes, especially like some scenes that you'd worked so hard to put together?
Yeah. Well, not for Noah.
Well, not, yeah,
I'll speak on my Noah. This is Noah speaking. For me, no. They used to joke around. They used to give me, our editor Robert and my brother, and then also our producing partner Jeremy, used to, you know, joke with me that my movie would be three still images, you know, beginning, middle, and end. So for me, when you have your first cut and you know every scene is in there, and you go back to how hard you work just to, you know, to be able to complete a scene. Or what you went through to get that specific location, but we just learned, you know, fairly quickly that it was best to forget about what it took to actually get that scene and
try to be as objective as you can and listen to your editor as much as you can too. So, but yeah, there's going to be that tendency to, because when you're shooting a scene, it seems essential, and that, you know, and that's the only reason that you even shoot it, because it is essential to the story. But yeah, it could be hard. And then at the same time, it feels, you know, pretty good to get rid of stuff too.
No. What is this?
Cleaning your...
Go ahead.
Sorry, no, I'm done.
Okay. What is the status on distribution? How can audiences see this film next?
Ah, that's a great question. So we're talking with the distributor right now. It's looking like it will go through. And the movie will come out, you know, start, you know, small release, mid to late March, and then, you know, hopefully work its way into, you know, start out 7-8 markets, and hopefully work its way to other markets. So, you know, it's all, as you guys know, depending on how well it performs. So, a few more months. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we can go to the site touchinghomemovie.com for updates. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you can go to inortheway.com as well.
Okay.
Inortheway.com, and that's our book website. So they're both, we're sort of this hybrid book slash movie, movie slash book internet entity.
Fantastic. Well, the book is called Either You're In or You're In the Way, and the film is Touching Home by Logan and Noah Miller. Get that mixed up. Logan and Noah, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you guys so much for having us.
Thank you so much. Terrific movie. Everybody listening has to go see it.